Let's talk about disability representation in gaming and how cool it can be. Welcome to Gaming Advantage. Welcome to Gaming Advantage. We are using tabletop role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons to help you make lives better. So, if you've been following things around here, Limitless Heroics, including characters with disabilities, mental illness, and neurodivergence in 5th edition, is being published really shortly. In fact, we have removed the pre-orders so that we can get everything all set for everyone who has pre-ordered, everyone who backed the Kickstarter, and we are ready to move forward with that. And so, if you missed out, then go to our website, links in the show notes to sign up for our emails, and you'll get notified as soon as it is publicly available. Also, coming up, looks like end of November, still nailing down an exact date, but we will be starting another Kickstarter. We want to make sure we get all the Limitless Heroic stuff done, sends tied up, all the different formats and things. But the new one, once we're ready for it, is called Limitless Champions. And it will feature at least 20 disabled miniatures. And we're featuring all kinds of conditions and experiences that are not usually represented in fantasy miniatures, such as Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, different mental illnesses represented by comfort animals or focus device. We've got a kobold with a fidget and different things like that. And so I'm so excited. I've had a chance to talk to lots of different people who are being represented through this, and or whose experiences at least are, and just the feedback I've gotten from them, the things that I've learned and been able to communicate in the game. I'm just super excited. We're going to have, besides the miniatures, which will be available as either an STL, so you can print your own, make copies for your friends, or the as a standard gray miniature, or as a pre-colored miniature. If you, like me, don't know even which end of the paintbrush to use, then those are for you, so that you can have nice pre-colored miniatures. It all depends on your budgets too. So we're going to have different options available for different people with some extra stretch goals and other things like that. But with these characters, we're going to have 5th edition stat blocks and adventures that the characters are featured in. So you can see how to use characters like this in a respectful way. And we'll have extra help and tips and stuff in the book that goes along with the adventures and the character descriptions. If you like modular formats like D&D Beyond, where you have everything in one place, all linked together, we're doing that with all of our publications. We're in the process of getting Limitless Heroics posted there. We've got adventures there and characters, new monsters, all kinds of things that we're just getting started. We've got a bunch of it ready there, and we'll have very soon, we'll have even more. But if you want to go check that out, you can access all of it for only $3 a month. And the sign up is through our Patreon. There's all kinds of exclusive extras. It's also a way to just support the work that we're doing here at Wormworks Publishing to improve inclusivity throughout the tabletop gaming sphere. And so you sign up to that for access. And also, if you can support a little bit more for $9 a month, you also get the PDFs of all of our products. So that can actually be a real savings when you look at the multiple things that we're going to be releasing, that you can get them that way cheaper than the retail price. And you also get the layer access that way too. And so again, links in the show notes, more information, you can go and check that out. And so now with that said, let's get right on to our interview. Role-playing games make anything possible. And since anything is possible, anything can be represented. But while anything can be represented, not everything is. Today, we welcome Rachel Boss and Wesley McGee Saxton from Forged Ahead, A Party to Access, to discuss representation and accessibility in tabletop gaming. Welcome, Rachel and Wes.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. Hi.
All right, so what would you like us to know about each of you personally, specifically talking to the tabletop RPG crowd?
So I guess hello to RPG crowd tuning into this show today. My name is Wesley, or Wes. I'm a non-binary person living in so-called Toronto. I just graduated from an acting school here in Toronto. I graduated from York University, and that's sort of also where I fell in love with tabletop gaming, because it combines two of my favorite things, that being acting and role-play with fantasy and sometimes sci-fi. So the second I picked up my first dice set, I kind of never put it down, and that's where RPGs started for me, I suppose.
Hi, I'm Rachel Voss. I am a manual wheelchair user that has been since I was 12. And then I started adaptive athletics and was on, made it to Team USA a few times for basketball, track and field, weightlifting and swimming once. But I also am just a shop kid at heart. I grew up in Collinsville, Illinois. So Dizzy Dugout, it was also my family. Within the family, I basically just stayed all the time at the shop. So that's where I first got introduced to role-playing games and tabletop in particular. But my roommate sat me down in college and said that if I lived with her, I was going to have to play a character. And that's really where I first started.
Yeah. Wow, what a great roommate.
Exactly. She's still my DM. We're playing tonight.
Cool. So tell me about Forge Ahead and the work that you do.
Would you like to start this one, Rachel?
Sure. So at Forge Ahead, we are tapping into our lived experiences as well as those in our community and our friends to design accurate representation of disability in tabletop role-playing games and in fantasy. Currently, we are focusing a lot on character development and tackling negative perspectives of disability in fantasy. And within that character development, we are also designing custom items for the characters and different mechanics pending on the character, because we are also designing a lot of our characters after real people who have disabilities that are our friends in our community. And so, yeah, Wes?
Yeah, further to jump in and add on that, we're also doing our best to act as a platform to showcase different creators and people in the community, whether that would be working with other disabled creators to turn them into characters or have them work with us on class rewrites to make things more accessible, or, you know, different ways of accessing the rule systems for 5e, incorporating different mobility devices as magical items, things like that. We are also working directly to sort of gain a bit of a foothold in the tabletop industry, working to coordinate with vendor partners and stuff like that, hopefully getting some funding for bigger projects that we're going to be talking about later in the interview.
Yeah, that's always helpful. It's people kind of take it for granted that just do real simple homebrew kind of things at home. But yeah, the stuff, it costs money to produce, especially when it comes to, you know, artwork and editing, sensitivity, reading, all that kind of stuff. It adds up real quick.
Yeah, for sure. I know Rachel and I are definitely experiencing that firsthand, trying to get things started. It was a little rough in the first few months of the organization, sort of outlining what we wanted to do and then figuring out what the costs would be and even where to begin, just knowing both of our situations and living in different countries too. That was tough in and of itself.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So how have you seen lives change because of your work?
We're seeing that people are less apprehensive to add disability into their campaign, which is great. It's amazing. We love seeing that people are more open to adding disability. But what we're even more excited about is that if you're less apprehensive to add disability to your campaign, that means it's going to translate off the table and you're going to be more open to engaging with individuals with disabilities in your community. And so ultimately, that's the goal. We want to bring disability representation to your lives and to your communities. And so by following us and being more willing to add disability in your campaign, you are also adding more disability in your life. Wes?
Further to that, just with the folks in the community that we have worked with to turn them into characters, some of the folks we've worked with have been very familiar with tabletop and very familiar with D&D and other systems, and some have not. And on both counts, people that we've worked with to turn them into characters have had wonderful, brilliantly emotional responses when we hand them the final artwork, saying that, you know, it's a dream that they never knew they had. A dear friend of mine that we worked with burst into tears when we handed him the artwork and just said this was absolutely amazing and blew it up all over the place. And it just goes to show you what an impact, like, proper grounded representation can have in a field where there wasn't much to begin with. And that's really what we're trying to do, is essentially get people with disabilities in the writer's room behind the scenes, grounding this representation so that when it comes to the forefront, it's fully fleshed out and 3D instead of just, you know, we're going to throw a character in a wheelchair just because we can, you know? So that's sort of the big impact we've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, I've seen that so much. People that just simply don't experience representation, whether it's in tabletop games, in, you know, I'm sure, Wes, with your acting background, you know, you've seen how it is in TV and movies and all that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, tabletop seems like one of the most difficult places to break in with that.
That is partially the reason that Forge Ahead was formed in the first place, was Rachel and I had both seen individually the comments in reaction to Sarah Thompson's combat wheelchair, the majority of them being, you know, vastly negative in the sense of, like, why would you want to have a wheelchair? It's D&D, you can do whatever you want. And the way Forge Ahead kind of got going was, in some random D&D group, I don't really remember what it was, Rachel shared her individual homebrew for a set of chairsmith tools, and I was just scrolling through Facebook, and I saw it, and I commented on it, was like, can we collaborate on something, please? And it just kind of evolved into collaborating from one thing to, we need to do something about this, so we're going to do something about it. And now, like a year and a half later, we're here. So,
and I, just to kind of talk about the Hollywood thing, I firmly believe that a lot of the ableism we are seeing in the tabletop community is directly related to the representation we are seeing in Hollywood. I recently did a discussion regarding the comparison between Avatar, the James Cameron's Avatar, and Avatar The Last Airbender. And James Cameron's Avatar is the number one grossing film of all time. So that is everyone's, that's the number one disability representation that the world has received, is that perspective that, like, you can't be happy unless you're walking. Your chair is a jail cell. You can't be free. So that is what people are seeing and what they're bringing to tabletop. However, what I feel very deeply is that this in tabletop, this conversation is so new. Like, it's like within the last less than 5 years old, right? This conversation, if we're able to really dive into it now and just really change those negative perspectives of disability, like I said, it'll translate off the table, but it's going to be so much easier than doing it IRL, because we've been talking for generations on how we need disability representation. And so it's the perfect place to start trying to bridge that gap in Hollywood. Is lots of things start with tabletop and role-playing things. And that's how a lot of things are being created.
Yeah. Yeah, and I sometimes wonder, you know, when you mentioned that, I think about how many, because there's such a close connection, how many actors in Hollywood play tabletop games.
Yeah.
And you know, their exposure to some of these things, how is that going to affect the way that, you know, what they learn and bring, you know, to the screen and insist on in movie writing and things like that. All right. So you just rescued a genie from the hands of an Ifriti, and it offers you three wishes to achieve your goals to make the world better. What do you wish for?
Number one, equity for all groups that are seeking it. Equity is a core need. It's not just a buzzword. It is vital to our health. There's lots of studies that suggest that and shows that equity is really important. And that's really what we're all striving for, is to be able to remove those barriers and things that you need, no matter what intersectionality you have.
Yeah. Number two is that everything that is designed in the world from this point forward is designed with accessibility first, and that will trigger what is called the curb cut effect. It will benefit everybody. I don't know if, Rachel, you wanted to go into the curb cut
effect. I'm going to go into the curb cut in a little bit later. So,
okay. You'll have to keep listening to the interview for that bit. And if I can jump into number three, if that's okay. Yep. We wanted to see a greater sense of interdependence and community in general. And what that means for people with disabilities and, frankly, minority groups in general, is the fact that that is how a lot of us survive in systems that were not designed for us, and how we've historically survived is by senses of community, mutual aid groups, that type of thing. Mutual aid has always been a common factor of disability as it intersects with other groups as well. Even looking from a historical perspective, from my research, that is how people in the Middle Ages, for example, in Europe, survived with disabilities. They had communities that were just ready and willing to support them, design special mobility devices are referenced in certain texts, and they are listed as specially crafted. And that is a big, like, nomenclature for that time, if something is specially crafted. I found in just researching, both for creating tabletop characters and also just my playwriting in general, that people with disabilities acted, and still do act for that matter, as sort of glue to hold their communities together. So just sort of what we bring to that sense of interdependence and community is something that we can teach a lot of non-disabled and dominant groups in general. And we just really want to see more of that sense of community become more commonplace, so we don't have to look so hard to find it.
Yeah, it's the balanced party.
Yeah,
you know, so often when I see these comments about, oh well, that person in the wheelchair or you know whatever their disability is, well they would never make it as an adventurer. Well, actually, most adventurers, no matter what their status is, wouldn't make it by themselves. But that's the point, that we all have different things to contribute, and we all need each other.
Exactly.
We all have strengths, and we all have limitations, and we all need to recognize them and form a community to be able to build the best group possible, which is the whole point of tabletop role-playing games.
Exactly, 100%.
It just sort of seems so obvious, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just what happens when ableism blinds your perspective of what should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so what one message would you like to give disabled gamers?
My message for disabled gamers specifically is just, it is possible. Do you want to be a badass monk that can punch people really hard and a power chair user at the same time? Yes, it's possible. You want to go dungeoneering in a wheelchair that, you know, isn't some cyberpunk wheelchair that can go downstairs? Yes, it's absolutely possible. homebrew and conceptualizing of, you know, different methodologies of completing things. I know Rachel's going to go into how we are adaptive in the real world. Now imagine if that adaptation ability was taken into a context where there's magic. We can do a lot of stuff. Anything you can dream of in RPG context in terms of being disabled, it can definitely happen.
Yeah. We are amazing problem solvers. We're the best problem solvers in the world because we have to, out of necessity. We have to be able to be like, oh, how am I going to get that? I really need that. And I'm going to reach it really high, or I'm going to get it off the ground, or I'm going to get this heavy thing into my car. Like every single day, there are decisions and problems that we are solving. And that makes us amazing role players. Like the people who can adapt and shift and think on their feet and just be able to pivot at a moment's notice are people with disabilities, are gamers with disabilities. And so we are the perfect role play gamers because we are creative. We think outside the box. We check all those interview things. But it's really true that we are problem solvers. And that's what you need at a good table is just a crew of problem solvers. So you are what we need.
Yeah, like even a super, super mundane real world example that I experienced yesterday was the TV remote was in a location that I could not reach in the chair that I was currently sitting in. And I had to look around for what I could reach within my periphery of what my arms could reach to potentially get that remote. And I ended up using like the most wackiest assortment of household objects I had at my disposal to create like a little chain to get the remote over to me because no one else was in the house. And in those moments, it almost feels like you're doing parkour of some kind, because if you mess up once while you're trying this problem-solving solution and the remote falls to the ground, then you might not have the ability to get it. So you got to make sure the try you're going for is the try that's going to get it in certain situations. And as Rachel was saying, that translates really well to both at the table and away from the table situations.
Yeah. Wow. Absolutely. I've seen that so often. And like I said, when you're already used to as a player, that your whole life is those kinds of, having to think outside the box constantly. When you get into an outside the box situation, which is common in role-playing games, then yeah, you're already used to it. I've seen this so often where a problem comes up and I see people, whatever the situation is, and in my case is parenting and just what I'm used to as a parent with disabled kids, and we're just constantly solving problems or helping our kids figure out how to navigate things or whatever. And so when something comes up, and there was one time we had a situation and someone said, oh, well, we've got the situation, there's this kid and they're kind of acting up or whatever, and we're not sure what to do and stuff. And I went, really, this is so minor. This is easy. And they said, no, it's easy for you because you daily handle so much more than this. And I guess you're right. but yeah, when it's yourself, you know, even more is the point, because it's every moment.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so what one message would you like to give to non-disabled gamers?
So we kind of touched base on it earlier, designing with accessibility first and everyone benefits. So it's time to learn about the curb cut effect. The curb cut effect essentially started as a form of advocacy. There are stories that pop up all over the US that talk about, some people say it started in Berkeley, some people say that started in Champaign, Illinois, some in Michigan. So basically someone had a business, and at some point in history, there were no ramps at intersections, on curbs. It was just curbs. And so when there was construction going on in front of a business, the owner of the business stepped out and was like, "Hey, construction crew, I have a friend that uses a wheelchair and just like, can I give you some money to make a ramp right here so my friend could get in instead of having to pop up the curb every time?" And so they did. They, you know, slipped them a 20 or whatever it was, and they made a curb cut. They found out that that intersection was the most turned into the most frequented intersection because of the curb cut, because people who were making deliveries could access the sidewalk easier. People who could walk but had like it hurt their knees to go up a step or their hips or whatever would go out of their way to use that intersection instead of trying to fight the curbs or whatever. So we designed something for people with disabilities, but it benefited everyone. So designing with accessibility first means that literally everyone will be able to benefit. I like to talk about that there are three types of disability. There's under the social model of disability, there are three types of disability. There's your permanent disability that we have, and then your temporary, which is like breaking your bone or whatever, but a situational disability. So it's completely depends on the circumstances, but I'll give you a really good example of you have a screaming, feverish baby in one hand, and you are trying to get the phone number of your doctor with the other. Right then, you have to be able to access your doctor's phone number with one hand. If you can't, then that's an issue. That's a barrier. That's a disability. And that's why, if you didn't know, that the touch point on touch objects like iPads and phones is 9 millimeters wide. That is what it has to be, because the average touch point is 8 to 10 millimeters. And so you are benefiting. You are accessing that curb cut effect to be able to use your phone with one hand. And that was designed, that's an ADA feature that's designed for people with disabilities that you are still benefiting from. So again, design, that's a really long example, but design with accessibility first and everyone benefits.
And we had one more thing to say to non-disabled gamers, which is that the concept of magic and disability can exist at the same time for a number of reasons. The first being, not everyone wants to be fixed. There seems to be a societal expectation that if we were given the option to just poof our impairments away, that everyone would do that. But it has become a core part of a lot of us. And that would just be like taking away your ability to, you know, be who you are fundamentally, or taking away one of your intersections. The disability community, of course, is not a monolith. There are varying degrees of this. There are people who would take the immediate poofing away of their impairments, and we do have to respect that, but not everyone wants that. And pretty much the majority of non-disabled people expect us to want that. And then on top of that, like even in, you know, official D&D content, for an example, like that type of magic that would fix those kind of issues, that would poof away the impairments, is ridiculously high level magic. There would be barriers to accessing that. Not everybody would have access to it. So therefore, communities and people that were further away from those centers of magic would require different adaptable means of surviving. Is there any other aspect that we have in the notes that I am missing, Rachel? Just to make sure we got everything.
The only thing I can think of is that we technically have some forms of magic in a way for healing in the world, which is healthcare. And there are plenty of people who aren't being able to get access IRL for healthcare, which is our world mm-hmm. of magic for healing. And you know why.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like and even if you look at, you know, officially published content for the, quote, societal systems, unquote, they're not perfect. They are absolutely not perfect. And even for an example to our real world magic, there are suits that are designed by bionic companies that are supposed to help people walk. There are wheelchairs that you can stand up in that are supposed to allow people to, you know, drive around from a standing position. Those would immensely improve quality of life for a lot of us. But are they commercially available? Absolutely not.
Because they're not accessible. Started out
and yeah, they're not accessible at all. Like those stand-up wheelchairs can cost upwards of like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And unless you're like extremely wealthy, because you're not going to get government coverage for, you know, a $150,000 wheelchair. The at least in my experience, the government tries to give you like the minimum amount of coverage it possibly can, and you have to fight tooth and claw to get what you actually need. So getting the luxury of a, you know, military technology bionic suit or some sort of Iron Man replacement or a wheelchair that can stand up is not something that's going to happen unless you're in the 1%. So the same would apply to like a 9th level spell. You're not just going to find a 9th level spell caster out on the street, you know. So that also exists, and people conveniently forget that because it shatters their image of, you know, fantasy being very monochrome in a way. And that's what we're trying to change, is we're trying to showcase that like different intersectionalities and abilities and ways of being and backgrounds exist anywhere. And honestly, it would make your fantasy setting more realistic if we were there, because we are.
War leaves disability in its wake. And that is literally what everyone is doing, is combat, 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 right? Even if you're role-playing, there's combat. And so that causes disability.
Yeah. Absolutely. And even that high level magic, if you look at the what it can actually do, short of a wish spell, even things like Greater Restoration, if you look closely, it you can heal the blinded condition, which is different from actual blindness. It's more the sort of temporary condition. And so if you kind of really drill down into those, it's really, unless there's someone handing out wishes on the street corners, it's really not happening, or it's extremely rare. It occurred to me a couple weeks ago that you know, people say, well, how can you have disabled people when there's clerics? And it occurred to me that well, how can you have farmers when there's Create Food and Water?
Yeah.
That's a much lower level spell.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you think about it, like the stuff you get from Create Food and Water is often purported to, you know, not be the best tasting stuff. So if everyone was just like, we're just going to create food and water and that's going to be fine, like, people are still going to want farmers.
Or Heroes Feast.
Yeah,
there you go. Yeah.
But yeah. Like, it's so silly, because it's really, again, it's just the ableism making people not understand, like, or that our experiences would be genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And send someone handing out good berries everywhere.
I'm just going to make a character now that's an NPC that's just handing out good berries. Like,
Johnny Goodberry goes around.
Yes.
The pot on his
head. I love that.
All right, so what projects are you working on now that you can talk about?
Let's talk about your mini series.
Okay, so I am in the beginning stages of sort of putting together a mini series. It's starting as one that is more focused around disability representation in the media, both in front of the camera and behind it. I'm hopefully going to be talking to my work contacts and people from my artist community, and how, you know, getting people with disabilities in writers' rooms, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, and in front of the camera, the combination of those two and in production and in costume design, all in throughout film and theater, is going to change the caliber of stories that we receive, the number and caliber of genuine stories that we receive in terms of people with disabilities. And I'm going to talk about how that will translate to the table. That's sort of my main first miniseries that I'm trying to chase down contacts for right now. It's very hard to get a hold of artists, let me tell you that. But, you know, that's the first of hopefully a few miniseries that will eventually be coming through.
We have, with all of our characters, we're trying to release coloring sheets for each of the characters. Coloring is a great way to stay focused, especially for us ADHD folks, whenever it's not your turn just to color. So we're trying to increase the representation in coloring itself. But then we also have our Patreon page that we have started this year, and we have a few goals that we're really excited about. Creating access cards, like actual physical cards with our characters with disabilities that have matching little mini standees, so that you're removing that barrier of what mini to use. It would come with that access card, and then accessible locations as well. And we are talking about that being a Kickstarter eventually, if we're a little slow on our patron goals. But I'm also designing a fantasy sport that is accessible. It's called Access Ball. And it's my baby. I'm a sports ball person. And so I really wanted an accessible sport where there's no classification system. You can just pick up people that have typically developed people with disabilities, be on the same team and play a game. So I'm designing that.
It's so cool. I'm so excited for everyone to see it. And just to clarify, access cards themselves are a system, I believe, a thing designed by Matt Colville, correct? Originally, the idea for them, was it Matt Colville?
No, well, Matt Colville, were basically, he created retainers, right? And so it's like a shortened NPC that's easier to throw into your games. And access cards were actually designed by Shanna Cantu. So we just looked at what other people are doing to try to streamline the NPCs so that it's so much easier just to throw them into your game, and it's not a barrier to put a new NPC in. And then the last thing is we are working on the Disability Scene, which is our podcast that we would like to create, which is our 500 patron stretch goal, where we'd pay game masters and players specifically with disabilities to come and play characters one scene at a time. So the goal is to be able to get this big archive of easy, obtainable representation of disability. You don't have to listen to an entire campaign to get snippets of disability representation. You could just come to the Disability Scene and pick the scene, and you know exactly where that you're going to get representation.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
To expand on that a little bit, we're going to be doing a mix of combat, role play, and everything in between. Because, you know, if you set up a combat scene, sometimes it can turn into role play and, you know, vice versa. And we just wanted to give folks, you know, snapshots of what it's like to actually have disabled players at your table and disabled characters in your campaign in combat, in role play, and how that influences, as Rachel said, without listening through a critical role sized campaign to find those snippets. And that is a huge part of one of our other just general goals throughout all of our content, is just combating DM burnout, especially where D&D 5e is concerned. Because 5e is a wonderfully detailed system. It's amazing. I love it. I love the level of detail. But so many people playing 5e get so burnt out so quickly, because there's so many things to keep track of. And the access cards that Shanna designed are designed to, as Rachel said, make it really easy to just pick up a card and say, okay, this is the NPC, this is a stat block that I need, and here's a mini. Okay, I can throw them into tonight's session. I don't have to worry about it. And a lot of the Disability Scene stuff is designed to be easily accessible and not intimidating, because when you're teaching someone D&D for the first time and you slam down a bunch of like textbooks in front of them and say, read this, that can be an accessibility barrier to introducing people to tabletop games. So that is a huge proponent of our work, is just like streamlining and simplifying things so you still get all the good juicy bits and awesome parts of the details, but it's easier to play the games that we love to play because we want to see more people join the game.
DM burnout is absolutely an accessibility issue. If you look at the accessibility, like just like how the guides are laid out, they were not designed with accessibility first. They were just designed to put as much information into the book as possible. And so disability is absolutely an accessibility issue that we are trying to tackle.
Yeah, no, that is definitely for sure. I really appreciate that. And this is yet another example of something where you create something to be more accessible to a certain number of people, and it just makes it better for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
I've talked to a lot of people that just can't use the core books. Thankfully, D&D Beyond is pretty, they've really kind of made a point of being accessible, and plus being browser based, you can use whatever kinds of browser plugins or just increasing font sizes or whatever you need, screen readers and things to make that accessible. So in fact, I hear people talk about, I really wish they'd make PDFs available. And while that would help some people, PDFs are terrible for screen readers, no matter what you do.
I have lots of experience with that in terms of trying to make PDFs work. Suffice it to say, I cannot play D&D without D&D Beyond. So shout out to D&D Beyond for being the reason I can play. And just trying to read source books is hell. Like, I will have to go find a YouTube video of someone who broke down the source book and get material from that. And thank you to all the wonderful people that do that. But you are right. Even the way it's laid out right now, even with browser plugins, can be incredibly challenging to read. And you know, that might be something we work on in the future, is how to fix source books, how to make source books accessible to different styles of reading, different people taking in information differently.
But yeah, absolutely. That is something that we've been talking about, because we want to make our own book in the future, and we're building this huge, really big storyline. But that's what we talked about, is that Wes loves to dive into that, give him the 40 pages of trees, give him all the information, and I need like the bullet point highlights or I'm not going to get it. So understanding that people digest information different is really important.
Yeah. And this really brings home the idea that even if, Wizards of the Coast, they're gradually making, improvements and things like that. And I hope that continues, and I fully expect it will. All right. But even, they go just completely in on accessibility, there's always going to be more things that need to be done. I mean, they can't do it all themselves either. We're still, as a gaming community, we still need the whole party and not just the one big paladin or whatever.
The conversation's never done. I'm glad that the conversation's starting at a lot of tables, but the conversation has to continue so that everyone can grow. And like, I know I have a lot of things I need to learn specifically on other people's disabilities. But I do find myself like trying to learn as much as I possibly can, acknowledging that I don't know everything.
I mean, thank you, Rachel, for sharing just even like our microcosm of working on this sort of grand storyline we want to eventually include, because Rachel's right. I am the person that would read the entire Silmarillion and enjoy every page of the Silmarillion, learning about everything I can, and diving into the Lord of the Rings wiki for hours at a time, and then looking up and realizing it's dark outside. And as Rachel said, she processes information differently than that. And that's been, the subject of quite of a few conversations, is how do we not lose any of the essence of the 40 pages of Trees while turning the 40 pages of Trees into something that, like, is more readable? And, like, where do you make concessions? Where do you keep things? And, you know, we would love to work on existing source books in that way. Like, that is one of our future goals, is, yes, create our own stuff with accessibility at the forefront, but also just taking what is there and sort of restructuring it from the ground up and making it more accessible than it is, making everything more available than it is.
Utilizing QR codes is something we want to do, right? Because then that could just link straight to a web page that has those accessibility plugins and all those other, like, language accessibility. Because right now, the source books, a lot of source books are only in English. We don't have a lot of source books other than English. So being able to have that information directly onto a website that could be Google translated, which isn't perfect, but it is a step, right? So that conversation would have to be continued after that.
Yeah. A lot of the times I see this in the performance world, and I'm sure you see it in sports, Rachel, is people love to make a big show of doing one thing for accessibility and then being like, yep, we've done the accessibility. Everything is available for everybody. Look at how great we are. Yet the disability community is like, hello? Like, you gave one-time funding donation. Do you know how quickly that money is going to be used for one problem and how many problems we're facing? So, you know, and that's not even speaking about the, like, privilege that comes with, like, for example, I'm a white masculine presenting non-binary person with a disability, which would be entirely different from a disabled person of color's experience. So, you know, I would just caution folks who are, you know, trying to support us and be allies. If you do one thing to help the disabled community, that's great, but it needs to be more than just, like, a one-time thing to solve all disability issues.
Yeah. Yeah, there's more than one box to check, eh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the more the world changes and things are changing so quickly in so many ways, that presents new challenges too. And so it's an ongoing, you know, even if we could solve all the problems right now, tomorrow there'll be a million new ones. So
yeah, COVID is the perfect example of that. 1.2 million people estimated have lifelong disabilities now after having COVID. And that's something we didn't expect years ago.
Yep, that happened in our house.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we will have all your contact information in our show notes, but where is the one best place that you'd like people to start to learn more about or contact you?
Our website would be the best place. You can contact us there. It has all of our contact information, and you'd be able to access our characters that we have right now, coloring sheets, and other just blog posts that we have created to help you experience disability through our lens and the lenses of our community.
And we also have your standard Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which is linked on the website. So we do have socials to follow. It'd be great if you did to stay up to date with the stuff we've got going on. Those are general contact places for sure.
All right. Well, Rachel, Wes, thank you so much for coming on the show. Everyone, check out those links in the show notes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to Playing the Other, how to play a disabled, mentally ill, or neurodivergent character, whether PC or NPC, that properly represents traits so as to represent those real-life people in your game and give them depth as characters while avoiding harmful stereotypes and tropes. Today, to help us with that, we are joined by Alexander Grinton. Welcome, Alexander.
Howdy, how you doing?
All right, so what would you like us to know about you as a person and as a gamer?
All right. Well, I'm coming in here. I've been a gamer for a long, long time. Can't even remember how long at this point. I am also a advocate for diversity and inclusion. I actually do that as one of my side duties with work for that, resulting in, or coming from that is that my gaming group is largely extremely diverse as well. That's where a lot of that fed from, is that we got together because we found so much of what we were looking for in the gaming world was not always inclusive for us. So we ended up just finding each other, so we're much more like-minded. And so when I mentioned that I am neurodivergent, I have autism, high functioning, not that that really matters, ADHD, I have now COVID anxiety, although I don't know if that is yet diagnosable, and as well as depression.
You know, the whole question of what's diagnosed or even diagnosable, and I, you know, that's an important just side thing that, that people's experiences are one thing, whether there's a correct label for it, and labels change over time and things like that. So,
Absolutely. I remember when I was diagnosed for autism originally, it was called Asperger's back then. And of course we now learn that we can avoid that, of course, because Hans Asperger's kind of ruined that for everybody. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so, but, yeah, exactly. The labels improve and mature over time as we learn what is a better way of defining, or rather, maybe not defining, but describing one another. A gaming group largely has a lot of people who are also neurodivergent, and I end up working a lot as well, DMing, volunteering with Autism Nova Scotia here in Halifax. So we deal a great deal with autistic gamers, especially. Deal with a lot of people who are autistic at work, because it is a large area of misunderstanding and adaptation. I see a lot of diversity and inclusion practices in various other areas of minority, such as 2SLGBTQIA+, as well as persons of color, and those are fantastic and key. But it can be very, very hard to describe somebody or adapt games to people who are mentally or physically divergent.
So what would you like people to know about your specific traits, your experiences, how you experience them, how you adapt to them, and what is and isn't helpful?
The biggest thing to understand is, especially with regards to ASD, Autistic Spectrum Disorder, is the, I mean, most people are aware of the difficulties that we can have with socializing, social cues, various, and those interpersonal communications and interactions. You see a great deal of improvement in the gaming experience nowadays with things like Discord, various other online methods, especially when you're not dealing with somebody in face-to-face. It makes it easier for me right now just because of the fact that I'm not using video with you. I'm using just voice, and I'm not worried about whether or not I am expressing my feelings on my face properly. I'm using air quotes there, and whether or not I'm interpreting yours properly as well. And that is a huge, huge factor for anybody with ASD, is removing that barrier and that challenge of trying to process all of the aspects of the game while also being able to process the challenges that come with social interactions. I mean, this is largely, we're dealing with social games, but we're using it as an escapism. We are not, when I'm playing, I'm not playing as Alex. I am playing as my PC, my NPC, or the DM. So I don't want to be me. I don't want to be me working on figuring it out what people are saying. I can hopefully rely on the other people to tell me how they're expressing, how they're looking. And that is just further amplified when we do it online, especially with Discord and, or Roll20, and people can add avatars. And honestly, the biggest thing that has been to help me with a lot of this online ones actually has been emojis or emoticons. You know, we often just, ignore them. But the fact that I can add at the end of a message, a happy face, smiley face, winky face, something to that effect, to instantly convey a feeling that is easily interpreted, is absolutely fantastic. And other things you can do like that is things like slash S for sarcasm at the end of a message and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Then something that I haven't really thought of, if just as far as being able to both communicate, you know, from yourself and reading other people. You know, I'm someone that has a pretty dry sense of humor and am often misinterpreted because I don't always use emojis when I post something and you know, sarcastic or something like that, and then people get offended, and it's like, oh, it like in my brain, I'm going, "What, you couldn't pick up on the sarcasm?" But no, they couldn't.
Yeah, and it's hugely different depending on your setting. In my gaming group, we won't use the sarcasm tags or the emojis as much because we understand each other. We've been playing together for years. But if you're playing at a convention or people you met just on Discord, it's hugely different, and all these extra safety tools and communication tools need to be added, and are really ways of bringing more people in, the same ways image descriptions are for screen readers.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as other people that you're playing with, are there things that they can do that can help improve your experience?
The biggest thing that has been for our group is taking routine and schedule breaks and actually sticking to them. The number of times that you get to a fight and you go, "All right, I know a break's coming up in 5 minutes, but let's just finish this fight. Let's finish this fight." And the fight will take 35, 40 minutes. And if you're somebody who's waiting for that, is your social battery is getting drained? No, you need that. And it might be that you then need to take more intense notes prior to the break, but so be it. It's those breaks that are hugely key. The other one that was big for us was properly addressing the soundscape. People who are with ASD, we have a huge variety of symptoms and effects and everything. But one of the common ones is sound sensitivity, because I'm talking to my more neurotypical friends. Only recently learned that people who are neurotypical typically don't actually hear the electricity through the walls, which I had no idea. I thought that was normal. So controlling the soundscape is a huge difference. And introducing a soundtrack is fantastic. It's a great way to create an environment and the atmosphere of the game and the narrative you're trying to portray. But making sure that it's appropriate and not distracting is absolutely huge. And then not just the actual controlled soundscape, but the uncontrolled soundscape. I have a lot of friends who rely on their phones being on loud because they've got important things coming up, work and babysitters and stuff like that. It might just be that they don't like vibration, but they need to be able to have their phone. But they also, it's hugely distracting for some people, especially, I said earlier, I have ADHD as well, that those distractions, I will zero in on that. And it can be hard to come back to my original point as to what I'm dealing with in the game.
Yeah, that's an area where my hearing aids come in real handy. I can have the volume as loud as I want, since it Bluetooths with my phone, and so I can have notifications. I've had some notifications coming in just as we've been talking, and nobody hears them except for me. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I love my hearing aids. You know, you talk about people that the whole question of, you know, if you live in a magic world, why wouldn't you just, you know, get rid of whatever those disabilities or whatever are. As long as I have my hearing aids, I'm being hard of hearing doesn't bother me at all. Though they don't 100% correct for things, the advantages that I have from them, it's like, okay, fine. I'll gladly deal with being hard of hearing, as long as I have these awesome hearing aids. So
totally agree. I've had that same question before, and I would not fix my ADHD or my autism if I had the chance. There have been so many downsides to them, but as long as you learn to use them, as they can be like superpowers in a lot of ways. Not negating people who have more significant impacts from those mental concerns, mind you, but I don't think I mentioned earlier, but I'm in the Navy, and using ADHD on the bridge in terms of combat preparation and war games is fantastic. I'm able to not take my Ritalin and sit there and see all the feats coming in. And it just feels so zen. It's wonderful.
So that brings up a point for if someone wants to play a character that has your experiences, like what do they need to know?
That's a hard one. Because the easy answer to that is what they should not do, which is, you know, pretty much the same answer for most times that you're going to be dealing, talking with people on your podcast, which is don't rely on tropes and exaggeration. There are plenty of people in the media who portray autism, especially in broad tropes. You see this as the Caleb Keller character on
My World. ADHD.
Anyway, for that. the point is you see a lot of these tropes, these stereotypes, and sure, they might be entertaining, especially when you're watching it on TV. But that is a different medium. Whereas if you are portraying somebody with autism or ADHD, and you are therefore, you know, I have ADHD, so I'm bouncing around, I can't focus on the squirrel. Like, those are things that when you're sitting at the table across from me, you're mocking me openly. And if we're friends, if we've been playing together for 20 years, that's a different mentality. I'd support my friends doing that as long as it's all the people we know in that room and safe. But if you're ever doing that at a convention, I'd be hard to argue you should be kicked out because for that kind of discrimination. Now, to talk about how you would actually play that character, somebody with ASD or somebody with ADHD, it would be hard. But I would say the biggest thing would be look at what some of the symptoms or aspects might be, and recognize that those two mental illnesses are very much, they're rarely an all or nothing. It's usually one or two traits that you have. You don't get this one, you do get that one. So easy ones are sound, smell, sound sensitivities. And you can definitely portray them both as strengths and weaknesses. Fate is fantastic for this. I believe they covered it as well, actually, in the accessibility guide that they produced. Also, yep. One of the best books, in my opinion. But they talk about how, with that like sound sensitivity that I was talking about earlier, your character might be better at picking up the sounds of, you know, enemies and tracking through the woods. But it also means that if you're, you know, dealing with a modern combat situation, a flashbang would be debilitating for most people, and it'd be crippling for your character. So it's understanding them, and rather than making them the focus, making them minor aspects or minor details and tweaking a couple points so that they're not exaggerated.
So then anything else that you would like to add about your experiences? I also wanted to just say appreciate your comment about soundtracks and things like that, because I know I use I play online, and we use Foundry as our tabletop, virtual tabletop. And I like to use background noise. You're in the city, you just hear the crowd noise and, you know, and things like that. Nice thing about Foundry, and I'm not sure about other systems, each person can individually adjust the volumes of ambient sounds and things like that. So that's real nice. And I've noticed that, you know, some people, they just turn it off, and, you know, and others leave it on and things like that. And so I think it's valuable if you don't have that option to include those kinds of, you know, sensory questions in your session zero, if it's a new group that you're not used to playing with. I mean, that's just a really good thing to be aware of that you might not think to ask otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't know Foundry did that, but that is a amazing tool. And to add to the other tool that we love for the same reason is subtitles. You know, most people think of using subtitles just for people who might have difficulty hearing, but it's also for people who have difficulty focusing or people who just prefer to read. It's a absolute game changer. Especially when you've got people who love accents and stuff. You know, accents are really cool, but they also make it hard to, you know, understand a lot of times.
Yeah, definitely. And recognize that when they're done on the fly, they're not always accurate.
Yeah. Oh, yes, of course. Sorry. Anyways, I get back to the question you had asked. Was the one thing I wanted to share is a lesson I learned, unfortunately, far, far too late, but more recently, is that, you know, I was always aware, reasonably aware. You obviously can't see me, but I'm a cisgendered white guy. So I wasn't aware of how important representation was in games. And it wasn't until I started seeing positive input that included me and my aspects of a marginalized group, which are, you know, relatively minor. I am literally dripping in privilege here, but just seeing people in games, in movies, in books that weren't tropes or punchlines, that were actually just included because that's who they are, it was absolutely massive. I was stunned because it had never been something that crossed my mind. I had understood that my friends who were people of color, you know, they were talking about representation is important. I said, yeah, of course, that just makes sense. But I didn't get it until I saw it myself. And I wish I had taken more time to understand that better when I was younger. So if I could pass on one final thing to everybody, it's learn from my mistake there and think about what inclusion and representation actually can be and can mean to the others. Because if you're like me, you are surrounded by privilege and it's just really hard to get and how much it can help people feel like they belong.
And just about everybody, even no matter how intersectional your life is, there's probably some area of privilege. You know, I'm sure there's exceptions to that. And there's probably, you know, three people right now that are just like screaming, going, hello, no, not me. but everybody yeah. else, you know, there's probably that one area at least, or probably more. And it's, you know, you mentioned, you know, when you were younger that you wish you had, and sometimes it can feel like, oh, you know, how did I get this far and not know this or not realize this? And, you know, and I found myself asking myself that question so often, and it's important to realize you don't know what you don't know. And so, if you didn't know these things before, that's okay. Don't beat yourself up about it. But now you know, yeah. You know, and you can do something about it, and you can start thinking about it and learning, and just start listening and paying attention to what's going on. And the other thing is that when you start adding representation to your game or anything else that wasn't there before, it may seem even forced at times. And just because you're not used to it being there. But that's okay. Push through and keep going. Because, you know, you talk about you know, how not seeing the representation before and then sort of gradually seeing it. At first, when we saw different demographics and marginalized groups being represented on TV or in movies and things like that, when you first see it and when you weren't seeing it before, you know, there's sometimes it's tokenism and things like that, but you may, you know, at first it may be a little jarring or feel like, oh, well, there's the, you know, they had to make a point of including this or, you know, or something like that. But over time you just get used to it and it's just, it, you know, you just expect it to the point where it's like, wait a minute, why is this missing? You know, when it's not there. And so it's important to realize that when you're adding it in, even if it feels a little strange or, you know, or forced or something like that, that, you know, just keep going. And eventually you get used to it. The people at your table get used to it. I know, you know, for me, I in the past did not include disabled characters until I started working on this project and realized how completely lacking they were. And so I just started including them in my games. And it really, for me, it was, you know, it was a very deliberate thing to do. And for my players, it was just like, okay, you know, it was just another character in, you know, in the game, and it didn't matter. I think it felt like a bigger deal to me than it did to them. They just rolled with it, and it was just yet another interesting character.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. To build on what you said too, is as I started putting it in, I realized I made a lot of mistakes in doing it. And people corrected me, and that's okay, because it means that I'm learning, and at the end of the day, you're trying, and that's what matters. I find too many people get caught up on being too politically correct, and it's not about saying the right thing. It's about trying. And when you mess up, it's about learning and trying harder and doing better the next time.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's so important. And I really, it seems to me, I've run into this so often where people are afraid to include it because they're afraid they're going to do it wrong. But like, that's not better.
Yeah. And, oh yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. Include, but learn, you know, and if you're going to include a character with a particular condition or trait, you know, do some research on it. And if you can, talk to people or something like that, or listen to a show like this. But then, you know, recognize that it's all about, the point is not just to teach your players, but to learn yourself. And, you know, we learn best through our mistakes. So, so that's okay.
Most importantly, ask questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you have any projects or social media profiles you'd like to share?
I would like to, but unfortunately it's not as far along as I'd hoped. So, I'm afraid I'll have to decline on that part of your offer. I appreciate it. But instead I will like to push, Fates and, Evil Hat's production for Gear Accessibility, because I think that is probably the best book on that I've read recently, and not just in the gaming community. But the amount of way they address inclusion and diversity is absolutely fantastic. And if more companies did that, if a ton of companies did that, your podcast wouldn't have much use because it would be standard.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So everyone's experience is different. And so note that what you heard today doesn't represent everyone with similar traits or diagnoses. This is just one example, and we already talked about that a bit. So if you'd like to come on the show and help people understand your symptoms or experiences so that they can have more accurate representation in their games, just go to wormworkspublishing.com/contact and contact me there. Alex, thanks so much for sharing yourself with us so that we can bring reality into fantasy and thus make that fantasy world a reality.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for what you're doing. It's an important thing.
So thanks again for watching, and a big shout out especially to our patrons, and a big Patreon shout out to our new patrons, Rachel and Kaz. Thank you so much for your support. You are 37 flavors of awesome, and I appreciate you. And also another thing with our Patreon is you can come hang out in our Discord. It's just a chance to connect on a little more informal level, a little easier than email. And I just love getting to know everyone better there. So by all means, jump in and post your questions and offer your thoughts and let's talk. So if you see this being helpful, hit the like button if you're watching this on YouTube. Or if you'd like to see more, subscribe to this using whatever you're using to subscribe to it. If you know people that need to hear this, please pass it on to them. Share the link. If you, like me, think everyone needs to hear this, put it out there on your social media. And don't forget those podcast ratings. It really makes a difference when it comes to pushing the algorithm. So thank you so much for joining us to make lives better with D&D. And we close with this question: how do you welcome diverse people at your table?